given the visions of the big.
How is Jews look at the example of the one of the things that members will cost at the end of the day to every human color. Now we are, the fact that we condemn Christian institutions that say no one in detail ever about the population that is either condemned or corrupted. I mean, there are rooms for no other people. Now this morning we're going to get a briefing from the minister just to know the current situation, the challenges that we have mentioned. But for the information members, we should know that the parliament has put up a task team led by Honorable Incumbent August Bennett, which went to Guadalupe on Monday, County. I have been part of a task team in encouraging some of the stakeholders engaging with the refugees, asylum seekers, and foreigners in general. What we discovered, which we covered over the course of time, the number of Palestinians who find themselves in that situation of being attacked. I always made a joke between myself and the community. Yesterday, in the portfolio committee of the safety and security, we were looking at the issue of important and the role of the community and all stakeholders that are involved in monitoring and coordinating the movement and speaking out of the country. Let's give that a we need to be a frontman. We are faced with the challenge we need to put our party position aside and really focus on building the challenge for to resolve the problem. Our government itself, because the member of parliament from the Democratic Alliance made a statement which I felt that was really uncomfortable. To an extent that, when you interpret that statement, it's exactly what we're trying to address for people who are in the public sector. We requested that we draw the statement. The leader, not just the member of parliament, who's supposed to be exemplar in showing solidarity to our brothers, went to the extent of saying that the people are here, these people are here to finish our food, they are eating our food, eating our hospitals, our food, and rain and water. And the committee that I'm representing for which I was responsible. Now I know from members of this committee, it's not all, and it has been clarified, but not even the position of that particular committee. I want to take this opportunity to call on the Democratic Alliance to come up here. And I know members of the team, which I have been one of them, they understand that. And we've been together trying to address and assist particular situation that we're facing. And those members of the DL who are serving the community understand the plight of refugees and asylum. And they are together with this committee saying, I'm saying that if you look at the advocacy of the mayor of the Western Cape and the Democratic Alliance member in parliament, they call a partner, you'll find that similarity in the manner in which AD, I shouldn't even tell about how it's patient or something. Therefore, it is come out in a wider picture. One of the things that is happening with the minister, I want to make you aware of, is that we will not allow a situation where people are trying to push for criminal attempts. Because we believe that there are attempts to try and create criminal attempts, especially the recent. And I think it's one thing that we want to condemn it. Because we believe that is from the game is called the better things to do. Or people together with foreigners. And that is why we want to do a record that will never accept that people are now going to be tanked into people who want to be guided or stayed in camps now. It's not in the point of the country. But I want to give the minister an opportunity that she has to. She has been quite very much involved leading a number of us in moving from one point to another point of the country. In trying to engage the experiences so far throughout our interaction and our business, former president of the Western Sun and very active in the limitations of the communication. We have met a number of all the other that we have been to within officials in the government of the in the center state in our system of communication. So, on that note, I want now to invite the minister. Take the committee through the current situation. After that, you are not going to be able to committee, but how ourselves as a committee are going to engage the community. Because we still have a responsibility to do and we have them to the situation. On that note, I invite you to the committee.
Thank you very much. And thanks. Honorable members for the education and lack of hope in my own perspective. I'd like to say that, honorable members, on the 14th of May 2008, after the outbreak of the Republic attack in Ireland, Cabinet set up an inter-ministerial task team led by myself, consisting of ministers of health, education, safety and security, social development, and mandated us to take to visit the area of Canada. Here we have the intention to investigate the nature of the attack, but also to probe why there was this wave of attack of foreigners in South Africa. Indeed, colleagues, we visited Alex on that day. However, we interacted with the captains on the ground, with the foreigners affected. But before we could even begin with the process of investigation and the IRC, we were confronted with a situation where there were more incidents of violence erupted in some of the areas in the country. This then required that we should immediately interact with a provincial task team which was set up by the government of Gauteng. But not only that, come together with the IMFC, which is an inter-ministerial committee of security nationally, because we were convinced that as a task team of ministers, we were not well placed really to investigate the issues. It would be better off to combine forces with the Gauteng provincial task team, which is on the ground, but also with the security ministers for purposes of having regular feedback from the security forces about what was happening on the ground. So on the 20th of May, we then held a press meeting at the Joint Chiefs. We have been working and meeting on a daily basis since then. The three teams have literally been led fused together, and we've been working together. And I must say that colleagues, and much as the terms of reference were more to focus on the causes of the violence, we found ourselves very much engulfed, more occupied by issues of humanitarian assistance because of the crisis, of the problem, the challenge of the crisis in conflict. At the time, the incident of attack that occurred in Gauteng, they had not spread to Western Cape or to any other part of the country. I do want to say, colleagues, that yes, there is something preliminary work that has been done to try and form a picture of really what could have led to the attack. But we feel very strongly as a team, but also even the security forces themselves feel that they don't have a complete picture. You can't say where a good picture of what really sparked this attack. And therefore, even though yesterday police said we were talking to happen about children late, during the challenges, we were unable to provide a report on one this violent report. We feel that it is premature provide a report on why they are here, on why South Africa is here for now, and in fact that there's a complete picture of what part this problem. In the week of the 20th of May, that whole week, we had flood miners in Gauteng alone, flood miners in 5,000 people registered. And 18,000 of those people were housed in police stations around Gauteng. And that really is the reason why we felt that this was a situation which was unacceptable, because obviously we cannot have people live in police stations because there are no such facilities which can really assist people. There are no admission facilities, no proper shelter, there are women and children. Even though we have a number of organizations and the old churches, in particular the Methodist Church, coming forward to provide food and blankets. But really, the situation was that a situation where we couldn't continue having people living in the manner in which we were at the communication. So the challenge really for us was to focus on what is it that we do to move people from where they were to get them to proper accommodation. I must say that there were many challenges. In South Africa, in Gauteng in particular, in some of the local municipalities, for instance, we found that we had several buildings in which we could have easily housed people on the same day. But we found that because of our own laws, because of some of the court rulings which had been there before, we could not move in people into those permanent buildings because of some of the court rulings. Because community, we are sure that if we move people into permanent shelter, into buildings that have family members, we will only accommodate those people in those buildings for 24 hours. Beyond that, we will start to move the people out of the building. So there were difficulties. The next step we took was that of the provincial government and instructed the mayor to identify land on which we could spend our care. So that the temporary shelters where people will be accommodated would be in 10 cities. Land was identified. An assessment of that land has been done. Tents have been acquired from the South African Defense Force. The UNHCR also has come on board to provide some tents. And we are now building, setting up a temporary shelter, and I do want at this point to take the opportunity to clarify to all of the members that that which we are setting up are temporary shelters. We have no intention of setting up refugee camps. I'm raising this to all of the members because there has been reports that some of the media houses that South Africa has set up refugee camps. The people who have been attacked are not necessarily refugees. People who have been attacked are refugees, asylum seekers, are undocumented migrants, and South Africans. So we have a whole range of people who have been attacked, and even people who have lost their lives, by the way. We have South Africans as well who have lost their lives. So as we are preparing these temporary shelters, we are also preparing to accommodate South Africans. So when we talk temporary shelter, our intention with the provincial government and the local structure is to ensure that as quickly as is possible, all these people are taken back into the community.
Sorry.
Chair
is broken.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Please don't write about it.
It's all right.
Thank you.
Sorry, Kai.
It's to ensure that all these people are reintegrated back into the communities where they live. That is the main focus of the program. So that is why we talk about temporary shelter. Temporary shelter, while communities, while local structures, while politicians, while religious leaders, while all of us are trying to deal with the challenge within our communities of xenophobia. Because we cannot create permanent shelters, because creating permanent shelters suggests that, in fact, we will be condoning this phenomenon. It means that we are encouraging that our people will never live side by side with foreigners. So we are creating temporary shelters. How temporary are temporary shelters? We've actually set ourselves some deadlines. Of course, this purely will not depend on government. It will purely depend on the work that will be done by all of us, as politicians, as community leaders who live in those areas. That we talk to our people, that we empower our people to understand the sensitivities, to understand the dangers of xenophobia, that it can be ethnic, such as what we've seen in Gauteng, that we've seen some incidents where people have killed people of other ethnic groups. Such as what we've seen that it can be sexist, it can be chauvinist, where we've seen incidents of women who have been raped in the name of xenophobia, in the name of driving out foreigners. It's sexist. It's violent. And ours, we feel, as the Department of Home Affairs, that indeed the challenge for us, together with the South African Human Rights Commission, is to forge partnerships with the rest of society to continue to conscientize our people about dangers of xenophobia. For us, that is the challenge. Of course, an issue has arisen about issues of border control. And I do want to say, Honorable Chair, without sounding defensive, that I've found that when people talk about issues of border control, people even forget that it is not the mandate of the Department of Home Affairs to conduct border control. It is not the mandate of the Department of Home Affairs to conduct border control. Ours is to regulate the stay of people, the entry and the stay of people in the country. Nonetheless, that is not the issue. The issue is the issue of migration has become a worldwide challenge. It is a global challenge. Even in countries where they believe they have the tightest border control, the issue of migration has become, of mixed flows of migration, has become a challenge. And it is for that reason that from the Department of Home Affairs, from the Ministry, we are calling for an Indaba in July. Because we believe that South Africans must talk. South Africans must talk. Whether we have huge numbers of asylum seekers in South Africa or refugees, somebody said today in the parliamentary program, it's because of the many refugees who are scattered all over the place. The point is, it is not a policy of South Africa. The point is, our policy, we may have had our shortcomings as a country. We may have had our shortcomings in the implementation of our policy. But our policy has been hailed as one of the best practices, that of integration of refugees. Even if tomorrow there's a current policy review going on in the department through the work stream that deals with issues of immigration, even if we were to talk about setting up something, it wouldn't be around the issue of establishing camps for refugees. You probably would want to regulate more in the area of your Section 22 permits, asylum seekers, your reception centers. But you can't say beyond that people who have refugee status should be confined to refugee camps. Because in the first place, you don't even know how long a refugee is going to remain in your country. I'm not sure that is the route South Africa would want to go. But also we need to understand, even those people who had documents during this period, during this violence, were not spared from the attack. They were still attacked and their documents were torn. Even those people who were naturalized, who had IDs, they were not spared from being attacked. Their IDs were torn. So the issue of documentation does not arise here. The challenge is the brutality, the barbarism, which has been demonstrated by South African brothers and sisters, which is what we have to deal with. What is it that has happened to our society, which has led to people attacking other brothers and sisters from the African continent? Is it that indeed, now that apartheid has gone, our black brothers are turning on others? Is it that, is it true that poverty can lead to this? If it is poverty, is it not true that then the whole of the African continent would be on each other's neck, it would be on fire because the whole of the African continent is poor? But it is not in flames. People have found ways of dealing with the challenge. Can we say South Africa is in flames now because of poverty? And we are saying no. Yes, there are challenges of service delivery. Yes, there are challenges of attitudes of people. And that's what we have to deal with. There are challenges of documentation. But we can't say that. We cannot justify what has happened by seeking to go out and explain it by saying it is because of our failure to patrol the borders, of our failure to provide documents, of our failure to do this. South Africans must deal with the barbarism which has developed amongst our people. As for us on our side as a department, there have been calls that, for instance, we should declare a general amnesty. Is that the best route? I want to remind members that in 1996, South Africa registered 1.6 migrants. 1.6 migrants during that amnesty. Million. We're not talking thousands here. We're talking millions. Those people now have permanent residence in South Africa. Those people now have permanent residence in South Africa. Not only do they have permanent residence, but obviously tapping from service delivery. I'm not sure that that is the route we want to go for now. Other people are saying we should declare a moratorium on deportation for X number of months. Some people are proposing that we should declare refugee status, this is civil society, on all refugee status on all migrants from Zimbabwe. And I thought these are some, this is ground we've covered before, where we've explained that it is not all Zimbabweans who want political asylum in South Africa. Zimbabweans, in the majority, who are in South Africa, are economic migrants who would want to go home over weekends and take some food to the family and come back and get a job, work during the week. On Friday, they want to go back, take some food because of the economic challenges of that country. So it's a combination of factors. There may be political challenges in Zimbabwe, but there are also economic factors. Some of the people would like to deal with their economic challenges for the sake of their families. So if people are saying we should now declare all of them refugees, what does it mean? Are we saying now we should prevent people from going home? Because once you take refugee status, there are serious consequences for that. I'm saying this knowing I've been a refugee before. There are serious consequences. You have to think through it. And you must be certain that indeed you want to be declared a refugee. You want to be a refugee. There are very serious consequences when somebody takes a decision that you want now to be a refugee in a country. Because there's not going to be easy way of going in and out of your country because you're a refugee in a country. You've taken political asylum. It means you run away from political persecution. is that what all of them, those thousands who are here, want to do? That's not what they want to do. Go on a Friday to Bay Bridge and watch those who want to go home on Friday and come back on the Sunday. This is not in defense of our own inadequacies, on our own inefficiency as a department, because people want to project this crisis and throw it at the doorstep of the Department of Home Affairs. This has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with a societal mindset, where a person can make a statement that people are finishing our food. Exactly what those crowds, those mobs are saying. That, you know, if you listen to a person in Ashageville saying the food prices have gone up because of the migrants. Ridiculous statements which have been made. The oil prices have gone up because of the migrants. That's what those people are saying. Somebody has taken advantage of the ignorance of our people. Somebody has taken advantage of the vulnerability of our people. Our people live in shacks. Not because South Africa has not delivered houses. Not because South Africa has not delivered houses. If you look at the numbers of houses which have been delivered, the question is, why do we continue to have informal settlements in this country, in spite of the numbers of houses? We have a strange phenomenon here, which we've never seen since our democracy, where young children, boy of 15, 16 year old, once he falls in love, thinks that he can have go into an informal settlement and have a shack and live with a girlfriend. You go into those informal settlements, our children are living with their girlfriends. They think that they can start a family. We've not conducted a survey of who are in those formal settlements. And the informal settlement have become this is where you find all these things happening. And of course, if you go in there and you say to people, you see, there's no service delivered. You see? You're living in squalor and hunger. You see? You're living in filth. You just say that. You just spread that word. You distribute pamphlets. In that state of vulnerability, those who've not lived in an informal settlement will not understand and appreciate it. But for those who've had families who've lived in there, who've gone there, who've visited over the weekend, or who've lived in there, you will understand. You are taking advantage of people whose state of mind is that of a government which has not delivered. But check with housing how many houses countrywide have been delivered by government. Why is it that we don't seem to make a dent in service delivery? Because the people now, service delivery has become housing. We talk to them, they are saying housing as we are moving around. But who lives in those houses? Who are the people in those shelters, in those informal settlements? Young boys and girls. Migrants. Now, then, you make a statement as a politician from where I'm sitting, and I say, indeed, they've taken this, they've taken that. You are inflaming the situation, you're not helping the country. So it's important for us as a country. This is not a situation we can embrace. It's not a situation we can encourage. It's a situation we must defuse, all of us. It's not the responsibility of government to defuse. Government cannot do it alone. It can only do it by forging partnerships with our community. I'm not defending government. I cannot defend government. But I'm saying let's take responsibility. by going out and defuse the situation. It's not good for us. In Gauteng, land has been secured, people are being moved, shelters have been built, but there are churches and halls which have been occupied by people, by the displacers. And some of the churches have already indicated that they have no problem with the people who are displaced remaining in those areas. So there's no need for us to remove the displaced people from some of those churches. But also we've had a situation from the Mozambican government, I must say this, colleagues. The Mozambican government has been absolutely very, very, very good and very cooperative with the South African government. When the migrants from Mozambique indicated that they would like to go home, the Mozambican government stepped in immediately and actually facilitated the repatriation of those people who wanted to go home. They did this even at a time when we were still thinking about what would be the consequences of doing this from our side as a government department. Because when this violence occurred, from the side of the department, my immediate reaction as minister together with the deputy minister was, whatever we do, in spite of the fact that there are people who would like to go home, but people should not misconstrue us as deporting people who are vulnerable. Because people are coming forward, both legal and illegal. People should not see us as taking advantage of people who are in a state of vulnerability, who are handing themselves over, literally. Because if a person comes to you for protection, who's coming to the country undocumented, who's undocumented, right? And you then say, you are undocumented, you are illegal, thank you very much, I'm taking you to Lindela, I'm getting you ready to go home. That's being opportunistic. That's taking advantage of a person who is in a state of vulnerability. So the directive we issued to the officials was, at this point in time, all the people who are affected by the violence cannot be deported. Some people then are saying, are we saying the illegal migrants should now remain in the country? That's not what we are saying. That's not what we are saying. But we are saying for those who are affected by this violence, for those who are displaced, for those whose property has been looted, for those whose property has been taken away from them, for those whose rights have been violated by our own people, we cannot further violate their rights by taking advantage of that psychological trauma by deporting them. Equally, colleagues, it does not mean that in areas where there is no violence, if there are people who are illegal, they shouldn't be deported. There's a policy that in South Africa we deport people who are illegal. It doesn't mean that if you find a person in Paris who's illegal, or at the border who's coming in who's illegal, and we find that person, then that person should not be deported. They must be deported. But we cannot accept a situation where, obviously, police or immigration officers in Gauteng during this time, that they would go around and arrest people who are displaced from those places of safety, obviously. So, the message which has to go out to our people is that, because I know also there are those sensitivities that we have to address the concerns and the anxieties, the fears of the South African public, that, oh yes, there are those, some of the fears are unfounded, but we cannot equally take advantage of the trauma which these people have gone through. Now, I was saying that the Mozambican government has repatriated a number of its people, and we want to make that very clear, that it is the Mozambican government. In instances where other people who are not necessarily Mozambicans who would want to go home, they will be assisted by the IOM, the International Organization on Migration. So in as South African government, we would facilitate that contact with IOM, which would then facilitate that movement. We are not preventing anyone from going home, but we should not at any point be seen as government to be deporting people who are vulnerable. Some people have raised questions such as, what about asylum refugees who want to go home? In the case of refugees who want to go home, those would be attended to by the UNHCR. Those are the only people who have a right to do that. As government, we can't do it. Never mind, we've had people say, we want to go home. We want to go home. Refugees, we want to go home. Then when you concentrate and say, okay, do you want to go home? Can we really do it? You want to go home? And then a person will say, I prefer to stay in South Africa. So that's the other thing, so that people must be also careful to say a number of refugees prefer to go home. I've not been informed by the UNHCR as to how many refugees, as in refugee, people who have status, political asylum, as to how many have gone home. But the UNHCR has been working with all of us to prepare for such an eventuality. We have doctors who've also approached the Minister of Health. There are Doctors Without Borders who are in the country to assist. There are women, quite a number of women who are pregnant who are in those shelters. But of course, you'll appreciate that even though we would have wanted to set up a specific shelter for women and children, that people have made it very clear that they wouldn't want to be separated from their families. That is the other challenge. So last week, the provincial government of Gauteng, the task team, at some point wanted to remove the women and the children. And the people were very clear that they want to be with their families. It doesn't matter if the man sleeps outside the tent because the tent is full, but they nonetheless would want to remain in closer to their families. Yesterday, Gauteng declared Gauteng a provincial disaster area, and that has been gazetted today. I hear that there's a move to do that even in the Western Cape. We could not declare it a national disaster because this does not affect the entire country. But if it becomes necessary for us to do so, obviously that will be considered at that point. We are discussing, colleagues, as cabinet. We made a proposal as a department to look at possibilities of using Section 32(1)(b) of the Immigration Act, of granting people temporary exemption from arrest and deportation of those people who are in displaced and therefore were in temporary shelters. This is a matter which is being discussed currently, which is being considered by cabinet. Obviously, people would want to hear from us the pros and section 1, 2B, I'm sorry. They would want to hear from us the pros and cons of that. what would be the advantages, what would be the disadvantages of that? Because we also don't want a situation where that would be taken advantage of by people other than the ones who are displaced. So we are now, people like Leanne and the team in the department are trying to assist us from NIB and the legal directorate as to what are the possible challenges if we went that route. But we also don't want, as the Department of Home Affairs, to be forced by other people to do that. We have to be proactive. That is why we've taken the proposal for discussion by colleagues. The biggest challenge that's going to confront us at the places of safety is going to be issues of security. We have agreed that we have to decentralize as much as is possible. We shouldn't have very big temporary shelters for purposes of management of the shelter, but also of security of the shelter. There is a possibility that we may go the route of private security companies for management, for the security management of the shelters, and then for the patrol of the areas to be patrolled by the South African police. But I don't want to go to details of deployments and so on. I'm not into policing. Those are issues which can be discussed with the relevant people. But one of the issues which we've agreed on as the security cluster of ministers is that because we've arrested 1,000, I'm sorry about the figure, 1,380 something people during this period, that special courts should be considered. We're working very closely with the Department of Justice and the prosecutors to ensure that special courts should be set up. There's a special team of detectives from the South African police to investigate purely these issues. There are teams which are interrogating people who have been arrested and are processing these cases. So special courts have been set up so that these cases do not create a further backlog in our courts, judicial system, in our court system. So special courts are being set up to deal strictly with the cases related to this violence. I am informed this morning that the numbers at the centers have decreased tremendously because there are communities which are beginning to accept some of the people back. We have best practice in Masipumelele here in the Western Cape, where the community has actually called back the people who were attacked by our people. We have in Gauteng people who've already gone back into the communities where they live. We have in Diepsloot a community which had this violence for the first 2 days only. And on the second day, the community launched a campaign to deal with the people who had introduced the violence in their area. So the people of Diepsloot, so we have areas where communities, what committees have come forward to deal with the challenge and said, we're not going to have this, because in most of the cases, it's copycatting what is happening in other areas. So some people, in some of the areas where it had already started, our own people have actually countered this thing, and it's gone. So mobilization of communities has become very critical for us to counter this xenophobia. If I may finish, colleagues, We've had meetings with the diplomats, the diplomatic community, to brief them about what has happened. Obviously, they've seen what has happened, but obviously to deal with their own fears and anxieties, but also to deal with their concerns, to answer whatever questions they have, but also to explain to them what it is that government is doing at a provincial level and at a national level. And of course, they raise their own concerns, their own fears, but I think there's going to be a need to interact on a regular basis with them so that we can alleviate these fears. If I may finish by saying, colleagues, I said earlier on, these attacks have been, there was a time when some people were raising questions whether in fact it's about targeting foreign nationals. Yes, they are targeting foreign nationals. In some areas, they target Zimbabweans, in Alex, they targeted Zimbabweans. In Germiston, they targeted Malawians and Mozambicans. But equally in Alex, there was a strange phenomenon there where people were targeting Shangans and Vendors. That is why it's important for all of us to go out and tell our people that xenophobia is racist, it is ethnic, it is sexist. It has all these strange elements to it, and therefore South African society cannot embrace this phenomenon. In fact, in Alex, that is where we had the raping of women as well. You can't rape women because they are foreigners. How do you drive them away? Why do you rape a woman? Do you rape a woman because she's a foreigner? So that is why we've also come out to say there are criminal elements who've decided to ride on the bandwagon. In Cape Town, there has been physical attacks on people. In the main, it's about looting of shops. In Umtata, people have gone to the foreigners to warn them that you must leave your shop. Get out of those shops. We are going to be here tomorrow at this shop. Nothing to do with attacking them. Nothing to do with them leaving the country. Everything to do with, we want this shop. Another element has been that of our own people were given houses, RDP houses, selling them to the foreigners to do business from those houses. And now a person wants the house back in order to sell it to another person. An element of corruption there. Societal challenge. And I think, colleagues, it's important that these are challenges we must talk about. What has happened to us? What has happened to our society? What has happened to the moral fiber of our society? What is it that has happened? Is it that now that the struggle for liberation is over, we've identified another enemy, or there are tendencies which we developed during the course of fighting for liberation? Let's talk about these things. Let's stop apportioning blame to one another and throwing one another with mud, but rather hold hands together, move together to find a solution to a big challenge which is seriously compromising democracy, which we fought for. Well, the question we should raise is, what kind of children are we bringing up? Because if you look at the children, these are children, men. These are 16, 17-year-olds. While in the street. what kind of children are we bringing up? What is it that we've done wrong? And that's what we have to address. I conclude, Chair, by saying we had in the turnaround, we have this work stream which is dealing with issues of migration. We've had a backlog project. And maybe the DG and myself and the DM should come and present the report of the backlog so that you can appreciate the extent and the gravity of the challenge we have of migration in the country. Because 2 years ago, when we launched the backlog project, we launched the backlog project because I had been informed that we had plus minus 100,000 backlog of asylum seekers in the country. So obviously, I got concerned and I said, no, let's launch a separate thing, a backlog project, strictly to deal with processing of asylum seekers. But also because as minister, at the time I had come into contact with asylum seekers who were holding Section 22 papers dating back 1995, person holding a Section 22 permit. So we needed to deal with that challenge. And we set up 4 backlog sites, as you know. And what has happened is that out of all that, end of the second year, we've now closed the backlog after 2 years. We had targeted, we said we would finish it in a year. We extended to 2 years. End of the second year, we've now closed the backlog. We have a report of the backlog. We have plus minus 60,000 redundant dormant files. Dormant files, we've used adverts, TV, radio, everything. Papers to call people to come forward who are holding Section 22 permits. We have 60 plus minus 60,000 files which are empty, dormant files. Why? People wouldn't come forward for 2 years. Why? Because these are people who were clogging our system, who knew from the beginning that they would never qualify for refugee status. But people had to find a way of remaining in the country by declaring themselves as asylum seekers and hold an asylum seeker permit. You know this. We called them for 2 years. And we failed, and we've declared those files closed. We've tried everything to reach those people, plus minus 60,000 files. That report must be presented to you, the full report of how many people were processed, how many people made it, were given a refugee status, how many rejections were made, how many people are appealing, who are currently in the country, who are appealing, how many files are dormant, the exact number. But it's over 60,000. That's what we are confronted with. So out there, among migrants who are undocumented, are people who are holding Section 22 permits, who did not come forward during the backlog project to have their status determination finalized. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, for the for the report, and I think that the members will agree with the input made by the minister. Based on our experiences and our interaction on the ground. Therefore, Minister, I want to take this opportunity to really thank you. But let me allow members, if there's any question that members want to ask, Ms. Matera, Hilda, or Mr. Khan,
thank you, Chairperson. Let me also thank the Minister for this report and say that Ms. Yela appreciates your efforts and those of your colleagues in trying to resolve these problems. But now my question would be, there have been some media reports that in more than one of these incidences, these attacks were preceded by meetings in some hostels. Now, what I want to find out is, in your interaction with other role players and victims, have you been able to establish the nature of these meetings and also the people who convened them? And also, there have been some talks about people being transported from one area to another to carry out these attacks. So how would you tell us about those things, findings about this?
Thank you very much, Minister. I would just like to find out now if the Minister has any plan forward. What would be the next step? Would the next step be in having our borders a little bit better controlled and letting people come in more legally and let them be documented as they come in so that we will have more or less an idea of how many people are coming in? Thank you.
Chairperson, Minister, I'm so grateful, I'm so impressed by your report, because one was worried about your investigations, your findings, that might lead to say these people must leave the country. Now, it demonstrates to me that you have gone into the real causes of this, more especially when you say you cannot pinpoint one dimension which is the cause of this. You know, when this happened, it reminded me, although one was still young, of 1949 in Durban, where the attack which was made on the Asiatic groups. And when you listen to that, you discovered that the really root cause was economical. And when you look at these two, I'm not the professor or a master of what really caused this, but just when you scrap the top side, you realize that the root cause is based on economics. It is based on one group being successful against your group. One group having this and you don't have this because they have been working hard to achieve this. So I was hurt when people came out and started raising the issue of poverty, the issue of unemployment, that we might be diverted to think this is the real cause, when the real cause is about other group being successful and you become jealousy, you it builds hatred, it creates so many things to South Africans. So listening to you, I'm so impressed that you have really gone into it and you know exactly, not a single word that you have said that is not true in your investigation. The root cause is our people have become angry because other people, they see them as being successful in making a living, like not being, they being not doing anything for themselves. Thanks.
Now, I was going to give Mama Tivela. Now, I'll have to come back to you. Okay, but let Mama Tivela give you that because she would tell this for us. If there's any other institution, I will take. But we said going to your focus is at 10 o'clock, and I was trying to push them in so that please finish so that members can die. But it's fine. If members want to engage, I think it's a good thing. Let's hear you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you so much, Minister. This was always a question on my mind about seeing these young people to say xenophobia, people of a certain place like Alexandra, residents. You can't have residents of children. That's impossible. Because if it was residents, really you would see elderly people amongst the groups there. But every time when you look at the TV, it was this young people, like school-going children, also involved there. So I'm very, very thankful to that. So my question will be, what's going to happen to this 60,000 closed files? What's going to happen to those people? Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the brief, Minister. Minister, you alluded to a point that you did really try to have a meeting with the diplomats of the affected, not only the affected, surely, maybe, of different countries to just to update them of the foundings and so on. But I in the news, well, we might not take from the news, but I think there is this thing coming up from people who then said that they would need a compensation for the losses. And then there is one country which is saying it is going to assist its people to be compensated by the government. And we just want to find out, is it something that can be taken forward by most of the countries, or how are we then going to deal with that matter? Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much indeed. My apologies to you, sir, and the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the Committee for being late this morning. I was late when I came, and I was in my constituency in Northern KwaZulu-Natal and came back on the first flight this morning. Anyway, I'm sorry that I wasn't here for the beginning of the Minister's statement. Chairperson, firstly, could I just align, as I have done before, the Democratic Alliance with the Minister's view that we need an urgent Indaba or meeting or something at a high level to discuss the concept and the problem of xenophobia. You've mentioned, ma'am, July, and I hope that we'll be part of that because it's something that needs to take place, and we'd very much like to be part of it. I've got three questions I'd like to ask the Minister, Chairperson. Firstly, and forgive me if you covered it before I walked in, but there's an ongoing argument that comes through about a third force behind the attacks. Now, the Minister has indicated that she's undertaking a study and she hasn't got, you know, the final answer, but could she perhaps just tell me if she knows where this argument comes from, that there's a third force behind it, and if there's any proof that there's a third force at this stage? And then, along the lines of my colleague, Mrs. Weber, has asked, whether your department will deploy more staff or procure temporary staff to assist with processing the documents of displaced people in the various places where they're currently accommodated. I know in Cape Town and surrounded the particular problem, I think the mayor of Cape Town may have been in contact with your office or otherwise. I know with Minister Lakota there has been contact there, but will you deploy additional staff or temporary staff? And more importantly, do you have or can you get access to those staff quite quickly? I understand documentation is the problem. And then just finally, Chairperson, and it's along the same lines, whether her department has the capacity in terms of human resources to deal with this problem, given all the other challenges that Home Affairs has got. And perhaps I could just throw in one final one that springs to mind, Chairperson, whether there has been any contact or working with the South African police services. I was overseas over the weekend, funny enough, on a immigration conference, and we saw on CNN how there were instances where South African police service officers appeared to stand around and do nothing, where people had been viciously attacked and subsequently died. Now, whether she's aware whether those instances are being investigated, I would assume it's very easy to identify the culprits. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Meetings in some of the hostels. Yes, we've received such reports. But as I said earlier on, colleague, I quite honestly, for now, we've not formed a complete picture of what there's a multiplicity of events which occurred prior to the violence in Alex, because that's where it started, and that's where some of these are reported to have occurred, and. Obviously, there's an investigation of that. You get reports from various members, from various structures of our community. It's not just the hostels. There's the meetings at hostels. It is said where people were discussing issues related to crime in the area, and where some people identified foreigners as people who are responsible for crime in the area. But you also have a meeting which supposedly was convened by some elements within SANCO, much earlier than the meeting which was convened at the hostel, which also discussed some issues related to service delivery, and where people were raising issues such as it seems service delivery people, foreigners are benefiting from service delivery and development within the area. You know, no truth to it. So there's a whole range of issues of allegations and counter allegations which you get when you interact with people in the community. But you can't. We feel that we cannot, on the basis of those, formulate an opinion or a report which says, therefore, these are the causes of the violent attacks. That's why I said from the beginning that for now we feel that we don't have enough information at our disposal which gives us a complete picture. You can't, on the basis of one incident or two, then say, this is the likelihood is that this is what has sparked this violence. Because also, it's clear to us that the violence is, you can't say it's sporadic, it's coordinated. It's coordinated. So are you going to say that one meeting which occurred there by that organization and that one which was convened by that organization to discuss this one issue is the one which would be responsible for this? You can't. It could be that there was coincidence. There was coincidence that this meeting discussed this particular issue of crime at a time when there was this, which was already, you know, coming in the community. So you really, for now, we can't say that these are the. The meeting at the hostel is what would have led to this. Talks of transportation of people, I don't know about that, really. We've not received that report from the communities, but I'm sure with the picture with the police, with the intelligence forces, agencies, the picture which they're trying to put together, they would be able to pick up that information. Obviously, you depend on people who live in those areas who are giving information to get a picture of what's happening. on the way forward on migrants. You know, we have, with all the sensitivities to our people and the challenges which they've raised, and we also should not appear to be insensitive. We need to deal with the issues people are raising separately from the issue of migrants. But I think one of the things which we need to emphasize to our people is how we have always lived with migrants in South Africa, and how South Africa's economy has always been dependent on migrant labor. And that even in 1996, when we gave this amnesty, in fact, if I may say this, 51,504 mine workers benefited from within the region, benefited from that amnesty. Because they had been the backbone of the economy in South Africa. Now, and therefore, we feel from where we are sitting, I'm on record as having said, for me, the policy of deportation has its limitations. You can use deportation as part of law enforcement, but you also have to use deportation. You also have to appreciate that deportation has its own challenges. One of the debates we've introduced amongst ourselves as colleagues and with cabinet is, to what extent are we dealing with the issue of illegal migration through deportation? Is deporting people and spending the money we are spending really dealing with the challenge of deportation, of illegal migration? Sorry, in South Africa. And we have said clearly around us within the region, there are economic challenges in some of the countries. And because of our own political and economic stability in South Africa, people will continue to flock into this country. We're not an island. They will come here to seek greener pastures, to seek jobs, in the same way that they've done in those days. The challenge is, how do we deal with that to prevent people from coming in illegally? How do we deal with that so that people don't come in illegally? In other words, our migration should provide for all sorts of permits beyond the work permits. My view is that from within the region, those who are already here, at some point, government may have to hold the bull by its horns and say, we already have these people who are here. Let us look at various options. They are here. You either go the route. When the dust has settled, not now, because emotions are high right now, have a sober debate, because we've introduced this debate before in cabinet last year, and see whether you couldn't have temporary residence permits. Not necessarily a general amnesty, temporary residence permit, or whatever form of permit, for your own security, so that you have everybody within the country at least recorded. Because for me, the concern we have is that you have people who are not recorded. You don't know who's in the country. So you have some form of documentation. It doesn't matter what the document is. You don't give them permanent residence. You don't give them work permits. That's fine. But you give them something so that at least that you know that Maggie Mawunye is in the country and I've got Maggie Mawunye's fingerprints. So that when Maggie Mawunye commits a crime, you are able to track down Maggie Mawunye. So for the security and the stability of the country, it's important for us to have a record of everybody who's in the country. And how you do it is another story. And this, I think, is what South Africans should begin. Because by saying, no, 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 out, out, don't provide anything, we just want them out, it's not helping the situation because you are still not going to prevent people from coming. They will come, but they'll go underground and remain illegal. So you've got to find ways of preventing people from remaining illegal, from remaining underground. People must be encouraged to come forward and secure some kind of document from us. And this is what we want. It may not be now, it may be with incoming, the future government, the next term, but my view is that South Africa government must find a way of knowing everybody in every street corner. We must know who lives where and what those people are doing in the country in order for us to assure the South African citizens that indeed we have your security in our interest. So that for me is the way forward. We may not succeed now, but for the future, I believe that Parliament and government should go this route. Lastly, the issue of compensation, really I can't talk on this matter. I've read about it, I've heard that this is what people are raising. I don't know if where violence has occurred before, even in Nigeria itself, when they've had conflicts of all sorts, whether the government of Nigeria has gone the route of compensating people, when it has had for instance, a conflict in the north of Nigeria, where government couldn't have been in control of that situation. I don't know if the government of Nigeria has had to take responsibility, for instance, of compensating people for a situation which was beyond its control. So I don't know if in this case, really, with all the good relations which we have with Nigeria, that Nigeria would want to go that route of wanting to demand from South Africa that we should compensate people for a situation we had no control over, for a situation which we never anticipated. I'm not sure if that's what people would want to see, but we wait and see when people demand of us to do so. The issue of additional staff, obviously, for all these things, with the situation as it is, we have to get. For me, what is important is that certain things have to happen, and the DG, as the accounting officer, must get staff. Where he finds the staff, I don't know. If it means additional staff, if it means volunteers, whatever, but I want certain things done. And he knows he's got the directive. Contact with SAPS, as you'll appreciate, the Minister of Safety and Security is part of the team, part of the task team. There's regular interaction. We receive daily reports from the police, from JOC, provincial JOC and national JOC. And of course, that's the forum where we interact with them and we raise questions, where additional tasks are given, where they are made to account for certain things. And if there are cases of misconduct, that's where issues are raised for investigation as well. Notion of a threat force, I also would want to avoid talking about this, but quite honestly, the way things have occurred in the past few weeks, they've They've left all of us, I'm sure yourself included, raising questions such as, is it that we are seeing counter-revolution in our country? Is it that these are just criminal elements? Is it that it's just a sporadic incident? So, you have, in order to find answers, you must raise all sorts of questions. You must have a whole list and start eliminating. So, I personally, I don't believe that you can have such a miracle of South Africa, such democracy, such stability, and believe that down the line you would not have elements who would want to destabilize your democracy. And that is why it is important, absolutely important, that in civic education at schools, perhaps this is what we should have started with from the beginning, that you instill a spirit of patriotism in young people, that they know that they have a responsibility to defend their country, to defend the revolution, to defend their democracy. This is what you have to instill in young people, so that as they take to the streets, they appreciate what it is that they are taking to the streets for. What is it that is taking us to the streets? Is it about issues of education? Is it about issues of our health? Is it about issues that have to do with our empowerment and development? They must absolutely defend the country, defend the revolution. Now, it's important that when an incidents of this nature happen in any country, you have to look, all of us as politicians, we have to sit back and draw a list, and you start eliminating. Is it counter-revolution? Yes, no. Is it just criminal elements? Yes, no. And find answers. So you've got to find answers in everything that is happening in the country. So we don't know if it is a threat force or not. But certainly, you cannot rule out. You cannot rule out that this is well orchestrated, organized action aimed at undermining that which all of us have achieved thus far, but riding on the needs and vulnerabilities of our people. Because it's not as though there are no challenges, but because there are challenges in our communities, I will ride and take advantage of those challenges to introduce another agenda. So you cannot rule out. That's why I said we cannot formulate a picture now, but you also cannot stand there with confidence and say, I rule those things out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. The time factor, I would want to engage further more of education. We really appreciate this input, Minister. For members, obviously, I know that members have been engaging on their constituencies around especially affected areas. Let us take this opportunity again to make this call to members to go back to the different areas as they've been doing. But let's have a way, let's have a way of bringing the issues that we pick up as we do this work in different communities into the portfolio committee. Because part of what is going to happen is that the report of Parliament will come out soon, of the task team of Parliament, which report, because I was part of that task team, almost similar to what the Minister has raised. You know, therefore I think there's a need for us to prepare ourselves for the July summit. We must be able to go there and come up with very good a way forward, which we must contribute as Parliament, and I hope that we're going to be invited, Minister, to the summit as watch well as a committee. We have to do our preparation, in fact, for that summit, meaning that one of the things that is coming, we have a refugee day on the 20th of June. And I thought that we'll use that opportunity ourselves as Parliament to either prepare ourselves through engagement with other stakeholders, refugees, as we have done it before, because it's only this Parliament, Minister, that has ever, there's no other Parliament that has done it anywhere in the world that I've checked, where refugees, asylum seekers, illegal immigrants, NGOs, parliamentarians in one room in Parliament engaging around, you know, the plight of refugees, the welfare issues. We have done it, and that report is still valid. If members can go back and look at the version of that report, we'll find that the issues that were raised there are still valid. For the ANC members, I think one of the ANC resolutions in conference, I'm not taking another platform law, is that ANC branches and members must engage around the issues of xenophobia, anti-xenophobia and all of that. And already, you know, there's a directive as to what things that we must do. So I want to appeal to the portfolio committee that in our spare time, next week we'll announce the program of engagement with different communities and all of that. And then we'll come up with a program to build up to the July a conference that the minister is organizing, meaning that we'll then have to have our own engagement at a particular level. So on that note, members, I know that you are going back to your caucuses. Over this weekend, members, before you leave, over this weekend, the week of the FPB. The weekend of the FPB, we have asked members who will be going to Galaga Estate on Sunday for the engagement with FPB. Secondly, is that there's amendment into the Film and Publication Bill coming back from the NCOP. So we need to look at that amendment. But part of what is critical for us is to finalize the refugee bill. We're supposed to go clause by clause. We did not meet this week because of certain problems. But next week we need to finalize that bill, because that bill will assist, in fact, the department on the issues that they are raising, for them to be able to speed up and to speed up the process.
I want to appeal to members that they need to continue for that bill.